Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 93 of Season 7 of Movie Our Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1995 Bruce Willis action flick Die Hard with a Vengeance, one minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Dave Palace of 5 Minutes of Mystery. Welcome back to the show, Dave.
Thanks for having me, Rob. I got my change for the bridge.
All right, I hope you have exact change. That's all I hope. Minute 93 begins with Zeus getting quite shocked. And ends with John trying to talk some sense into Zeus. So we ended things yesterday with John approaching the truck, shooting into it, opening the door, and Misha falls out, and he lands on the ground. And this minute begins with Zeus going, "Oh, man!" And John then, like, leans down towards Misha's body, and he goes, "What the fuck are you doing?" He goes, interrogating him. He goes, "Well, what's he going to tell you? I'm dead? Well, I ain't going to know till I ask him, am I?" And then John starts giving Zeus some instructions. He goes, "Go around and see if there's any aspirin in that glove box." He goes, "No way, you do it." And John is, like, rifling through the stuff that he finds from Misha. See, we know in every one of these movies, John takes the time to go through the pockets of the many kills, you know, for clues.
Yeah.
He's quite good with that. And he goes, 10 quarters. And he goes, "The guy in the dump truck had 10 quarters. Exactly 10 quarters. He goes, "Well, maybe they were making some long distance phone calls." He goes, "No, it's for the bridge." "What? It's the toll on the bridge."
You're right. I love that we have a callback to when he's looting. I mean, he's looting everybody, you're right, in Die Hard 1, because he has nothing. He doesn't even have shoes on. Tries it. Doesn't work. And it makes me laugh, because for people that love to play role-playing games like Dungeons & Dragons, for example, one of the things that players always got to remember to do is, you know, the Dungeon Master says, "Hey, you and your Ranger and your Elf and your Barbarian, you fight some bad guys, some, you know, goblins or, you know, some, like, orc characters, and you get to fight them." And, like, you know, sometimes the GM's like, "All right, the battle's over." It's always good as a player to be like, "We want to loot the bodies." Like, unless we're in a rush, we want to loot the bodies, because A, you might, the GM might give you a piece of loot that's important, or he might give you some form of instructions or some clue to the next, you know, the next campaign or the next mission. And, you know, it's just one of those things where you always got to remember to do that. That makes it in a good party of dungeon players that, like, know to do that, loot the bodies, the guys.
Well, you have to have a good dungeon master who actually has thought ahead, instead of him saying, "Oh, well, I didn't even think about what they have on them."
Yeah. I mean, a lot of times, like, you know, I've talked to my friend, he just really good GMing, and for not just dungeons, but other stuff. And he says that, like, a lot of times a quick answer, if, like, you didn't think about the loot and what's in their bodies, he's like, always, like, make sure it's like, if anyone's counting their ammo, just be nice, give them their ammo back. He's like, sometimes if someone's weak, he's like, just give them a small health potion. He's like, or he's like, give them, like, a really basic, like, tool that, you know, he's like, always reward the players, even if it's something great. He's like, give it something, because, you know, it rewards the players for thinking ahead of you. He's like, don't be mad at the players for outthinking you. Like, reward them for, like, thinking past your game, right, and your rules. And I think in this being Simon Says, this game, you know, John's really trying to play outside of Simon's rules. He's really trying to be like, how much can I get away with if I get information? Because Simon sure is not giving me any answers. That's right.
Now, when John tells him to go look in the glove compartment for aspirin, did you notice why Zeus says that he's not going to do it?
I mean, he looks and, yeah, he sees that bloody body. I mean, I love that camera pan. Mm-hmm. It's like
we have a shot of the back of Eric's head, yeah, with just blood all over it, and it looks like John got him from behind, you know.
So, I mean, I think Zeus probably has seen crime. He's probably seen a few bodies, like, working in Harlem. I'm sure he's like, look, there's some gangs in the area. They get violent. But he's never been on the actual, like, side of, like, a gunfight. He's probably, like, closed his shop and hid. So he's never, like, been up and, like, oh, yeah, we were responsible for killing these two guys. And now he wants me to, like, loot around a body. Like, Zeus is like, I've never looted a body in my life, and I can't do it right now. So, and it's also, That's when he got, you know, like, because they had this argument throughout the movie where it's like, I'm a civilian, you're a cop, you know, I, you know, Zeus takes the authority to do something, and John says, you don't have that authority, I do, you know, and then they do the argument of like, you know, you need me more than I need you, and this is kind of like Zeus kind of being like, no, I'm actually not doing it. Like, I'm not the cop, you're the cop, like, I'm going to play back, I will play, I'll play second fiddle on this scene because I'm not doing that.
Exactly.
So it's kind of like him kind of – it's kind of him like kind of reneging on the deal of like, yo, I'm going to do as much authority as you are. He's like, actually, no. I'm the dead body is where I draw the line. And, yeah, if you want to loot that guy for aspirin, go ahead.
Exactly. Now, did you notice in second 14, if you look behind Zeus, you see an obscured sign.
Yeah.
Okay. And this is something that we
– I mean, Lake Ave Greenwich? I think it says Lake Ave Greenwich.
That's right. Okay. So we mentioned this a little bit on Monday when Sean was here, okay, that basically they're not very far from Greenwich, Connecticut. It's about a 20-minute drive. So this is – they're by the exit that you get off to go to Greenwich, which is pretty amazing.
Okay.
That, you know, that it's that close, you know, to get there. Now, I mean, Greenwich is known for being it's known as it's part of the Gold Coast, which is an affluent area of Greenwich. I mean, a lot of times you see in movies from the 50s, you know, all these people who work in Manhattan, you know, are taking the train from Connecticut. This is like the area where all those people were living.
Okay.
It's named after a borough of London, you know, which is also known as Greenwich, you know. So it was actually founded in 1640, and it was part of the New Haven colony. And they actually purchased the land there for 25 English coats. Which is pretty amazing that that's all they had to give.
I'm actually looking it up. I'm looking it up now on Google Maps because I'm so interested. And like, so yeah, it's the first. It's pretty much one of the first towns you hit going into Connecticut. Mm-hmm. And I'm actually trying to figure out if Google Maps is going to give me. So it looks like if we're gonna get into the sauce this hard, Greenwich looks like it's in Washington County. Exits 23, 24, 27, 24. So I'm going to try to see if I can get New York exit. Let's try 24. I don't even know if that's going to help me. That's near Albany. That's not the right area. It's the wrong side of New York. I was actually trying to figure out.
No, because there's
– if I could try to
– Well, when I first did a search for Greenwich, I was thinking it was Greenwich, New York. And Greenwich, New York is near Albany. And who lived there? Chester A. Arthur.
I'm sorry. Yeah. So trying to find this Greenwich exit on the highway, I can't. But I do understand how like they're very close. So, and you, what road would you say
the, they were on? The Sawmill River Parkway.
So it's Sawmill River Parkway. Okay. I see 95. I didn't see Sawmill.
Right. Unfortunately, right. You can't read what exit it is. No, that's obscured, but you can still see the Lake Avenue and stuff like that. Okay. So you wanted to talk about Eric and Misha. Yes. So go ahead.
Okay. So, well, it's more like these guys are, they're probably Simon's men. They could be Targa's men too. I don't really know who, but it's like the two of them were sent up to Yankee Stadium and you said like, yeah, the tickets to get them to go and I guess be shot. And it's kind of funny how like that's what their plan was. Imagine like you're on this team and you're a sniper squad, you're a two-man sniper spotter. And like your man's like, all right, you're going up to Yankee Stadium. You're like, oh, who are we assassinating while we're up here? I'm like, oh, I'm going to have this cop that I'm going to like lead along. He's going to be up there somewhere in like the early afternoon. And they're like, wait, what? Yeah, he's going to be up there and he's going to like look at this little tile and I'm going to say game over and then you shoot him. And they're like, Simon, that's making no sense. And that is an incredible waste of our time. And it's like, So I have to assume there was an early part of this movie where the two of them go to Yankee Stadium and they have to like dressed like either security guards or some kind of vendors to get into Yankee Stadium. They had to like get up into the box. They had to maybe shoot a few security guards. And like, it's, you know, like the scene, like in Die Hard, they just like, whoever the custodians are, who are like the only people working a Yankee Stadium today, that maybe there's not even a game, who knows? Or there's a game later that day.
Well, it's like, we figured out if like, this is, you know, if this is, once again, if this is 1994, it was during the strike.
Yeah.
So there were no games at the time.
So, okay. So it's, so that means, okay. So, okay. All right. Look, what if we did this? Okay. Let's dial it back. It's tickets to Yankee Stadium. And it was like, they're not real tickets. They're like fake tickets that like printed to look like it. And that's why there's two. It's like, you know, Simon's guys also had a freaking thermal label printer, and they made those as well. I mean, if he's got spotters on almost every rooftop in New York, why not at this point? They make fake Yankees tickets to do this. So, like I said, they go through all of this production. He sends these assassin sniper guys up to Yankee Stadium. They might have to, like, shoot their way in, open the gates, make sure McClane and Zeus go right to that target where they have the spot on. It's just like – it's like what you think about it. They're like – this is a complete waste of our time. You guys don't need this on the boat, or like, you know, like, I mean, maybe if you want to joke about it, maybe these might have been some of the guys that were watching McClane for Simon. Like, they were spotting him and they were on the radio telling, so Simon knew, but Simon didn't have to be on that rooftop. You right. know what I'm saying? So maybe they're the ones that spotted Zeus first. I'm like, yo, there's some guy walking over from a pawn shop. And, you know, then we have to play the whole thing where it's like, okay, now we know he has a Samaritan.
Okay, but to actually help with the scenario that you're bringing here, in the script, it mentions when they're in Harlem that there are two guys sitting and watching them. They don't mention their names, but they mention you know, they give Simon an update as to what's going on.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah, so we can, for headcanon's sake, we could pretend it's these guys. I mean, also, like, between the script and the editing of this movie, obviously, it's probably changed. You know, they had to change a lot of vibes, and we're like, all right, what do we do with these guys? Or this scene, let's cut that, and let's just put them later, and we'll, you know, it'll be hodgepodge together enough that people won't think too much about
it. Correct.
What's more important is the fact that they were supposed to go to the bridge the bridge to the boat after they killed McClane. That is what's important. They got the quarters. Everyone's got these quarters on them. So no matter what Simon has these guys do, when he calls all the guys back in, they're supposed to come through the bridge, pay the toll, be clean about it. Don't shoot your way through. Go right to the boat and get ready to take
off. Yeah, I mean, the planning here is amazing. You know, they have this all really planned out. And even just getting, you know, 10 quarters for each guy. You know, they have 14 dump trucks plus this. So they need 15 times... 250. You know, so
yeah. So like there was a scene like probably a few days earlier where one of their guys went to the bank and just pulled out a bunch of, like, I don't know if they pulled out Deutschmarks and got changed the dollars, but they at least were like, hello, I am businessman, I would like quarters. And they're just like, all right, sir. And they just giving him stacks of quarters, and they all have to take it back to their base, and they all have to divvy it back to Nor Delights. That's the thing, is they go back to Nor Delights. So that's because now we know by the ending, that's where they were like, that's probably where they were planning a lot of this, but prior to them entering New York. And so that's where Simon has it, pill bottles. So it's like, okay, so they're doing all this, and they're like, everyone, line up. We're going to give you these, you know, tape these quarters to you and keep them in your pocket, yada, yada, yada. And just like, they had to, like, you know, regiment these guys. They are soldiers, so it's not like they can't be trained to do it. But it's, yeah, it's like one of those things you go, wow, they you know, yes. Like, this was a real production.
Completely.
To prep all that.
So, yeah. Is that's all you want to say about these two guys at this point?
Yeah, no, I just kind of wanted to, like, they just feel like very goons, and you don't think too much about them in the movie. And I think I like, but the fact is, like, they're a sniper spotter team. Like, these are clearly like specialized guys. They aren't these were like in Simon's detail. They were probably like really good at like spotting and gathering evidence. So like these, I would feel like these guys are a cut above. That's why it's like they were almost getting John and Zeus in the car. Like these guys are a cut above the usual goons. Right.
That well, John especially when you know who they are. I mean, we talked about this a few weeks ago, but Misha is actually a stunt coordinator director. That even in this movie, he worked with McTiernan a lot and. In a whole bunch of other movies also. And the guy who plays Eric is actually a wrestler. He was a professional wrestler at the time.
Okay. Yeah, he looked bulky. He looked like
Yeah,
he got beef on him.
exactly.
So cool
Great.
ass guys.
So
Yeah.
basically, at this point, you know, John's trying to put the pieces together, trying to figure out what's going on here with the whole thing. He looks around, trying to figure out where they're going. You know, he has somewhat of an idea, and then the shot changes, and surprise, surprise, it stopped raining. All right, and they're in front of a bridge. Now, do you have any idea what bridge this is?
No, I am not a New Yorker. I don't know. And I also do not know how long it took for them to get to that spot back to this bridge. Because I'm like, that's probably why it's not raining. There's like, there must have been like a bunch of time that had passed. I mean, we must have
Well,
jumped.
they can't have that much time because, you know, time's a ticking, as they say here.
Time, you're right. No, time is ticking, but it's kind of hard to tell. Like, and it's kind of like the whole thing with Dunkirk, where you're like their perspectives were different because all these things were happening at the same time, but you know, go back and forth. So I have to assume that, like, you know, Lambert and Cobb and Connie, their timeline is that, you know, with the school is one line, and then John and Zeus driving around doing the other thing is kind of another timeline. So they, you're right, they do chop up a cut, but I mean, I don't know. I just had, even during the day, they still had to take in the weather, still had to take probably like 30 minutes to get back.
Okay, well, the bridge that they have to get to is the Tappan Zee.
Okay.
Okay, this is the Tappan
The
Zee Bridge.
What bridge?
It's called the Tappan Zee.
Tappan Zee Bridge.
Tappan Zee Bridge. It was it was known as the Governor Malcolm Wilson Tappan Zee Bridge. Okay, which
All right,
was,
let's go
it
to
was
Tappan
built,
Zee Bridge on Google
it
Maps.
Was built in 1955, and they actually closed it down in 2017, because they opened a new one, which is the Mario Cuomo Tappan Zee Bridge. You know, they
okay.
built it a little further down, you know, from the whole thing.
Okay, all right. Okay, I kind of see what we're doing here. All right, I just see the roads.
Right, it's basically the bridge that crosses the Hudson River at one of the widest points. It's about 25 miles north of Midtown Manhattan.
Yeah.
And it basically connects Rockland County with Westchester County in the Lower Hudson Valley.
Okay. Yeah. All right. I see. I finally see the Sawmill River Parkway. Okay. I see. So yeah, like they're. I mean, they're still looks like they're still on what I would consider the western side of Yonkers. So they're not too far into the Connecticut area. I thought they were like at the line, but it looks like they're. They're not too bad off. So you're right. Okay, this would not be horrible. This would be about two interchange changes. They're back on 287, and then there you go. You're on the road.
Yep.
Okay. I did cross this bridge, I believe, I think, when I was driving up to see Sean. So, yeah, okay. Yeah, I think this is the road I took. Yeah, because I then went to Connecticut 7. Oh, my God. F Connecticut Route 7. Oh, my God. I wish they had bigger infrastructure. They could turn that into a highway because they clearly want to use it like a highway, but it's a damn, it's a barely a county road. God almighty.
Right. So basically the, the Tappan is the name of an American Indian tribe that used to live in the area. And Z is the Dutch word for sea. So that's how they originally thought of the idea of calling it the Tappan Zee Bridge. And as I said, it was then renamed. Well, in 1994, they named it the Malcolm Wilson Bridge, which means that just around the time that this movie was filmed and takes place, that's when they changed the name as the Tappan Zee Bridge. You know, same thing with the Triborough. The Triborough's official name is the Robert F. Kennedy Bridge, but nobody uses that. They just still call it the Triborough.
Okay. So going by what you're saying here with. So this boat must have been somewhere up near like Nyack or Sleepy Hollow. That's where the boat was like loaded up when they went up the aqueducts. So they went up the aqueducts. They got the trucks and loaded them somewhere in either on Nyack or in the Sleepy Hollow area. There must be some kind of dock port somewhere up there. Then obviously going by later in the time, they switch out the trucks with the gold with lead. And, you know, and Targo doesn't know about it. So, like, somewhere along that line and around that docks, the truck gets switched. So then what we're saying is by the time we get to the end, near the end of this act, they must be piling the boat south of the Hudson the whole time, passing Yonkers, passing, like, Washington Heights, through Manhattan, and then it's like, because it looks like when that thing blows near the end of the film, it's really in like the heart of like the New York like business area. Like he really wants to make a big show of it.
Well, that's what the that's what the groupers like to do. They like to have a big make a big production of things. You know, as they're continuing to drive here, so then Zeus screams out, "Hey, there, down on the wharf, dump trucks, right there." You know, which is pretty good that he's able to see all these things as they're driving by. You know, and
I mean, yeah. Once they do the bridge, they were like, the bridge is important. And when we hit the bridge, looking both sides of the road, and he probably said, we're looking for dump trucks. So it's like, he's like, that's the last thing we knew is they were driving dump trucks. Right. So
and then John says, "Christ, they got it loaded on the ship already." And then Zeus screams, "How about the Coast Guard? It'll take them an hour before they get here." And they just like stop the car right in the middle of the road, you know, which is really smart. You know, let's just block traffic. You know, why not? And you know, you see that both lanes people stopped. So yeah, that's pretty crazy.
Once you hear it, the sound editor turns it down, but you can hear there's just like honking going over as they're arguing about it. Like the cars are still like, "Hey, I'm sparked here. You took both lanes up." And because of this whole thing with the schools, there's not a single toll booth taker probably who's not managed. So it's probably like or any civil servant who's like working bridge stuff. So it's like there's no bridge police. There's no port authority. And we don't even know. Yeah. Did the feds get a hold of the Coast Guard? Like, are the Coast Guard like, you know, are there boats patrolling up and like sending their guys up like, "Hey, get off the boats. You got to go into schools." Right. We don't know.
Exactly.
It's so funny.
That's right. And you know, then they both continue arguing as they're looking at the whole thing, because we've seen that Zeus finally has a reason to want to stop things now that he knows that the school is where his where his nephews are, and that's what it is. So he goes, "We can jump," and John goes, "What?" He goes, "We can jump." He goes, "You're out of your mind. It's 100 feet down to the deck." And it's very funny because, you know, John seems like the type of guy who would be willing to try something like this, you know, and he's the one trying to talk Zeus out of it.
Yeah, because I think he's like, he sees Zeus as like the recklessness that he used to be. And he's like, "Yeah, man, I'm reckless, but like I've done this in the past. Like, there's a real science to it. The only reason I jumped was because the entire building was going to blow up." Like, he's like, "We got to think this through."
Right.
That's so funny.
All right. So you have anything else for this minute?
No, we're standing here at the bridge. We don't know what to do with the boat.
So the script has a little bit more information, which is interesting. You know, it says they're in the Port Chester, New York Industrial Wharf, a bleak wharf servicing a scrap metal facility. A hulking, rusted 400-foot cargo ship at the dock. Simon stands watching as the dump trucks are pushed one by one into the teeth of a metal scrapper, the largest made. The first truck, driverless, is pushed by the second in line, the second by the third, etc. The teeth of the scrapper show the truck's cab engine and the gold bullion within the body, spitting it out in shredded bits into the hull of the cargo ship. McLean and Zeus are at the knoll, looking down through the trees at the wharf, a quarter mile below. In the background, the station wagon is parked on the side of the sawmill. The BMW pulls in, Targo gets out, and walks through the parking lot towards the cargo ship. McLean pulls out his handgun and inserts a new clip. He pulls out up his pant leg, exposing an ankle holster. He unstraps the holster and hands it to Zeus. "Here, look, McLean, I don't know if I'm up to this." McLean stares at him. Zeus reluctantly takes the ankle holster. McLean picks up the Samsonite briefcase they've been carrying since Washington Square Park and trudges down to the wharf. Zeus follows McLean. So again, they change things a little bit here about the way I like the way they do it in the movie. It's much cleaner. You know, the way that they say, besides the fact that they you know, decide to completely block traffic. That's more of an issue.
I want to say one last thing about the trucks. So what do you think? How do you think they switched the goal? I know you don't have to answer because you can talk to later about a later guest, but I'm going to just say I think what happened is Simon set up some checkpoint that the drivers of the trucks knew. They would drive their box trucks, and somehow, and they had it like, they must have had a bunch of crates they already had ready, and they must have had a crane, and they must have been like, they load, somehow the dump trucks go up a ramp or something, they dump back, it lands somehow into one of those cargo containers, and then a crane picks up the cargo container, moves it onto a semi truck, and then they put like an empty one or a lead filled one back on, or they fill the dump trucks or something like that. So it's like they somehow do a switch somewhere, and Targo, you know, they do it where Targo isn't seeing it. So he just sees the trucks are pulling up to the boat and they're loading, but he doesn't realize they're loading like lead or whatever it is, or scrap metal.
Yeah.
Into the things. Because obviously Simon doesn't need the gold out of New York right then and there. He just needs the gold away from the boat. So it's like the boat, so he probably has like 8 semi-trailers somewhere near a dock that they took over, loaded with the gold. Meanwhile, everyone's down in the harbor because a giant bomb went off in a truck. So it's like, so now no one's looking up toward the Yonkers Sleepy Hollow area of the New York area. And then, yeah, they drive up. And I'm sure because of more federal traffic and everything down there, no one's putting a lot of attention. They think these guys flew the country. They don't realize these guys are like driving, you know, just through Canada as like school buses and the lacrosse team like they did at the end with the costume. So, all right, I just wanted to say that because that's always like something I always think about is like, how did they do the switch? How do they like beat Targo without knowing? Because Targo is clearly a man of the mission. I was going to blow up the gold, and Simon's like, ah, buddy, I'm taking your girl and your gold.
Yeah, pretty much. Right. Okay. Well, I'll tell my theory when we get to it. But I like your theory. I like your theory.
Please. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So every Wednesday we have a series called segment. Every Wednesday we have a segment called Jesus Ante, where my guests will give their top 5 Samuel L. Jackson performances. So why don't you start with your number 5 and work your way up, Dave?
I will. And I will tell you, this is so far the hardest because of Sam Jackson's career, because he's played so many different types of just, though we all know Sam Jackson is a guy who likes to scream and say cool quotes, he's had so many different types of styles and attitudes and career paths. That's like, you know, I'll say right now, I don't have any of the Nick Fury shield. And that was hard. I was like, do I put Nick Fury on this? Like, do I put Avengers? I feel like that was the most action-packed Nick Fury has been, really, was in that movie. I mean, I know he's done the TV show, and I know he's done, like, the Winter Soldier stuff. But I wanted to give it an honorable mention, but no, it's not on my list. So number 5, I want to start with Jurassic Park. I feel like that, also in the 90s, we didn't really, like, probably a lot of home audiences didn't know Samuel Jackson yet. But they knew the guy with the cigarette that said, hold on to your butts. And I just remember that phrase, that's hold right. on to your butts. Was such a catchphrase for the summer of like 93. It was such a good line. Like, you know, maybe kids got more addicted to smoking because they saw how cool it looked when it was just in his mouth dangling. I always think about that. Between him and Aykroyd might have the best cigarette acting with Dan Aykroyd with a dangling cigarette looking at Slimer in Ghostbusters and Mr. Arnold in Jurassic Park. So what's greater? For Negotiator, I think this is a great Sam Jackson led film, and it's one of those films where it's like, you know, Danny Raymond and you know, and I know people and I know people are gonna say, oh, well, Kevin Spacey's in it. Yo, I know Kevin Spacey did some really shady I know that you don't have to advertise it, but I'm like, in this movie Kevin Spacey and Sam Jackson are like so good head to head. And I love their dynamic. And so it's like one of those two films where I'm like, look, I could separate for this moment, for the next 2 hours, I could separate the man from this character. And those guys, Kevin Spacey and Sam Jackson, are just so good. Such a good, like, pot thriller. I mean, God, look at me, that guys you got in it, though. You got David Morse. You got John Spencer, J.T. Walsh, Paul Giamatti, Regina Taylor. Like, it's nuts. Dean Norris. It's like everybody who's like either a cop character actor or like, yeah, God. Like, like, this cast is such a good, like, movie. Yeah, a movie about people in a hostage situation, and both sides, you see the tension boiling on both sides. So, okay, boom. That's a great Sam Jackson one. Number 3. Pulp Fiction, it really is like, I mean, of all the Tarantino films, it's very hard to be like that he was involved with it is hard to be like, what is his best? But I think aesthetically, the Jules is so cool, from his quotes to his attitude, from his look with the afro to him and Tim Roth eyeing it down at the diner, the wallet. It's like, you know, it really is. It shows like Sam Jackson. Sam Jackson was pulling off like one-liners and looks like Arnold Schwarzenegger was doing years earlier. And, you know, and like Sam Jackson is like, he's a good-looking guy. He's cut fit, but he's not muscular. But like, he's got such a good tongue to hit those one-liners. And he's been making bank on it ever since.
Yeah.
Number three.
Number two.
Number two is his role in Unbreakable and Glass. I think Elijah, him, you think at first he's just playing this like magical Negro trait where it's like he's going to tell Bruce Willis in Unbreakable all about his powers. And you're thinking it's just like the trope of just like the Bagger Vance type character. And then you realize, oh my God, he's a mastermind villain. He is realizing he is a mastermind villain because he created Bruce Willis's character with tragedies, and he is a domestic terrorist. And you're like, oh my God, he's an evil, evil man that killed so many innocents to prove his theory right. And you're just, and then he becomes like the protagonist in Glass, because you're just like, they're all like, you know, they have powers, they have abilities, and you're not understanding with what's her name from American Horror Story, I can't remember her name, because she plays the psychiatrist. And you're just like, it's a game of mind.
Sarah Paulson, right?
Palmer. Sarah Palmer, yeah. Sarah Palmer.
No, Paulson.
Thank you. So yeah, Sarah Paulson and him, the mind games they play in that asylum. And I think that's another good, like, it's a very good, like, pot boiler film. Because it is. It's so much in that in that asylum. The characters that we've seen throughout the trilogy so far. And I think it's so fun. I think I'm so glad it came out in 2019, because I feel like if it came out too late, I don't know if it would have gotten like a movie release. It might have gotten right to streaming, and it wouldn't have been a satisfying trilogy. So I'm really glad that Shyamalan got to get that in theaters while like the hype was up, and he like did it right before Avengers. So it's like people were interested in comic book films. They get to see this like take on comic book stuff, and it was like right in that zone where we were like so hyped for what we were going to do in Avengers Endgame. So great character he played there. And yeah, number one is Die Hard with a Vengeance, because I think this is the first time where it was like that's his stardom. His stardom blew up on this. I think he was just like a character actor who was treated as a character actor who had a few lines, but he wouldn't carry a film. And I think this movie showed a man could carry a movie. And he was like, you know, he's worth putting on the top of the ticket. And like another honorable mention in a sick way is Snakes on a Plane. It's like Snakes on a Plane that summer. It was like everyone's like, we need him to say that line. And it wasn't a line in the film. And Sam Jackson pretty much saw the YouTube fan clips. And the studio was like, Sam, can you come in and re-record this line? We got to put it in a movie and we're going to kick it up. And we got and it was I believe it's 2004. I think it's 2004. Or 2006, 2007, 2008. It's like somewhere
2006. I believe it's 2006. I think.
Thank you. I remember I read the novelization of that book. I remember I was on a vacation with my parents and a fire alarm went off in the hotel. And I don't know why I was smart enough to know, but I grabbed like my day bag when I went outside. And I remember it had the book in it. And so I like was outside during a fire alarm of our hotel, and I was just reading the book, and I'm just like, I'm happy as a clam right now. It's a nice, like, it's a nice fall day and or a fall evening, and like I was under a lamppost just reading Snakes on a Plane, thinking about like, man, I can't wait to watch this movie in a couple weeks. And it was the best filming experience of my life, going to the theater. Everyone was like dressing up like snakes. People had foam snakes, there was beach balls, people were going, you say snakes, I say plane, snakes, plane. And so I was like, I'm like, when people talk about like the magic of theater, it was great. That was like, that was also a high school reunion pretty much. Like anyone who I met through middle school and high school, like everybody was there that night at the Cherry Hill Lowe's. So, and it's all thanks to Sam Jackson. If he wasn't in that movie, that would not have happened. Like it would just been like some other actor who's setting these dumb lines, and I guess Blockbuster was around, but it wasn't Netflix. It wasn't Redbox. Barely Redbox might have been around then, but it would have been such a straight to like DVD. No one ever heard of it type of film.
Yeah. Great. That is a great list. Thank you very much for that. So, why don't you once again tell people where they can find Dave Palace?
Hey, find me over at 5minutesofmystery.com. 5 minutes of mystery, the podcast where I cover mystery men in 5 minute chunks. And we talk all about comic book stuff and character actors. Great character actor movie as well.
And while you're doing that, we can rate, review, and subscribe to any podcast you might be using to listen to this show. Finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to movierobminute@movierob.net. So until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay.
Yippee-ki-yay!
Johnny comes marching home again, hoorah, hoorah. We'll give him a hearty welcome then, hoorah, hoorah. The men will cheer, the boys will shout, the ladies they will all turn out, and we'll all feel glad when Johnny comes marching home.